Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Both of us have been playing the old Zelda, the old Skyward Sword, the old Skyward Sword HD on Switch, which is your first old-school traditional Zelda. Now, I should probably say that I'm Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hello, Scott Tilford. You don't need to do that anymore. I like people just guessing who we are and what this is.
Maybe on, like, one of these weeks we'll just ramble for an entire podcast and leave some Twitter handles behind, and they can just get in touch if they care, they got any questions, they want to know what's going on. But for me, I mean, Skyward Sword is, or has long been, the most hated Zelda. Like, a lot of people, not necessarily a lot of people, but some people bounce off Majora's Mask because it's like this weird sort of hacked together version of Ocarina. It was like the first time they'd done like a sequel to a mainline Zelda. And then, but for the most part, if you're going to talk to like average Zelda fans about which Zelda didn't click, it's Skyward Sword. And that tends to be because of the motion controls. It tends to be because of the way that that game has constant tutorialization. The original version always has the character of Fee popping up, telling you what to do, where to go, and all that kind of thing. And it's just, they made a lot of different tweaks for the re-release on Switch. And so this is your first proper mainline Zelda. It's my 9th or whatever. I don't know how many there are in total. Quite a lot. But it's been, yeah, I feel like I've played all of them apart from Oracle of Seasons and Oracle of Ages, which are the two Game Boy ones that they did like back in the day after Link's Awakening, I think. But how are you sort of finding it? We're going to break down the different parts of it, because I think this is a marked improvement on the 2011 one. And I think even with the way we were talking before we started recording, I'm gravitating to the parts that I think you found a bit boring. And I'm kind of going like, oh God, this is old school Zelda, in a way that you're going, this is bloody brilliant, because like, I've not done this stuff before.
Totally, man. Like, you know, it was really interesting going into it because, like you say, I've only really played Breath of the Wild, played, you know, a little bit of Ocarina of Time on my cousin's N64 or whatever that came out on. I can't remember. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, that was N64.
Just annoyed everyone with that comment. I'm so sorry. So obviously, you know, I've been wanting to get into one of these quote-unquote traditional Zeldas for a long time. Mm-hmm. And this is the first one that's kind of really popped up that's been accessible outside of having to go and buy an old console, track down old cartridges or whatever. So I've jumped on it, and to be honest, really enjoying it. I wasn't sure if I was going to after the first few hours. Like you said, there's so much prologue and so much tutorializing to be done in this game specifically, you know, when you're up in Skyloft and you're just kind of getting to grips with everything. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of that, it took me about 2 hours to get out of that area because I was just like I said, getting to grips with everything, trying to familiarize myself with the locations, who these people are, what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And during that stint, I was kind of like, ooh, I'm not sure, having no nostalgia for this, whether or not I'm going to stick it out. 20 hours later, almost, that's not even an issue anymore. Like, I can't even remember those first 2 hours, because everything else after that has been so engaging, so compelling, and so fun that, you know, I kind of like had my come to Jesus moment or whatever on this entire franchise. Come to Zelda. If Breath of the Wild hadn't done it already, this is kind of proof that, oh, I have been missing out, and I can't wait to try everything else that's come.
So one thing that I want to ask you, because you, going from Breath of the Wild into an old school traditional Zelda, for me, it's like a welcoming, it's a comfort blanket. It's sort of like, oh God, I remember how much old school, what those old school Zeldas feel, the way the item pop-ups work, the way he always like holds whatever the item up is in midair, like, you got a thing. And like the way they open the chests, all slow motion, the build, the music, everything else. It has this, like I said, it's this warm comfort blanket, and I adored that opening bit because, I mean, Zelda formulaic Zelda is, there's always the opening area that you spend X amount of time in, which in the old school ones, it was in the 2D ones, it was just like a house. You could run around the house for a bit, you hear the call, Zelda's in trouble, run off, and there's the adventure, and it took like 2 seconds or something. But that over time became this thing where it was like, we're going to bulk out this whole space that you can hang out in and talk to all these different characters. Ocarina had it. Twilight Princess had a one that went on for what felt like an entire afternoon. It was just like, for the love of God, is there an actual game in here? And Wind Waker had like a nice little island. And then in this one, because it is set in the sky, like it's this whole like old school, because it's the prequel, which is like, it was a massive deal in 2011, which is another thing I want to talk to you about, is like, how much do you care about any of the stuff that they're bringing in? Because for me, they're answering stuff that has been built up for like 20 odd years of Zelda, like, you know, going like, oh, this is the origin of like the symbol from Ocarina of Time. It's actually because the old school Hylians used to worship these birds, and they had this like thing with these loft-wing birds, and I'm going like, oh my god, that's the coolest thing in the world, you've explained the symbol. Oh my god. And whereas I imagine for you it's like, well, you're taking a bit long, and like we're sort of we're 2 hours in, and like, am I gonna get a green tunic? Like, what the hell's actually going on? But for me, to bring it around to that, like that sort of opening space, I loved all that stuff, because I love the fact you get to see Zelda's parents was a massive deal. But again, that'd only be a massive deal to me. Yeah. And so things like things like that, where I was like, I could spend forever here going like, oh, how much other stuff have you like seeded that is in? Because they, even the idea of them saying in the opening monologue that the idea of the ancient princess, or the ancient, this is a tale passed down from time, is like a nod to the fan theory that every single Zelda is just a campfire story told around a different metaphysical campfire. It's just sort of, you know, sometimes it's more cartoony, it's more childlike because a child is telling that story or whatever. And I loved all that stuff. But in terms of the opening, I guess the pacing of it, have you found that like once it kicked in, you just forgot about that opening stuff? Because like, I think it's maybe geared towards that way if you're coming in fresh.
Yeah, totally. You know, more or less, like, I think the opening's like good. I don't think it's bad. Just, you know, for me, I was kind of like just wanting to be let loose a little bit. And I know that they've made the tutorials and stuff better in this re-release than they were in the original Wii version. But even then, I was just kind of like itching for some exploration, some kind of like combat, something else. And while I was appreciating all of the lore and the stories and the characters that I was getting to meet, like, I think the characters in it are so strong and I love being around them. Yeah, it was just a kind of like pacing issue where I was just eager to get out. But I've since been eager to get back because, you know, after every dungeon, after every area, you're encouraged to return to the sky and explore, do side quests, talk to people, you know, use your new abilities to, you know, engage with puzzles that you couldn't originally. So even in that opening area, I was kind of like eyeing up points of interest that I was excited to return to later on. And having since returned to them, they've paid off in a really interesting way. But yeah, it was fascinating going into it, you know, as this kind of like Zelda fan who hasn't played many of the games, knows broadly about the lore, but, you know, the specific symbols, like, I recognize them, but had no ties to them, didn't really know what they meant. So when I was getting explanations for them and stuff, I was just like, that's neat. But they obviously, you know, I didn't feel them as, you know, payoffs to decades worth of questions and mystery and setup and stuff, but it was you know, presented in an engaging way, and hopefully now when I go back to the other games will, you know, make me appreciate what's in there with an added perspective as well.
Well, I think it works both ways. It was like in Breath of the Wild, like they brought the Temple of Time is like right next to where you come out of the cave, which is from Ocarina of Time. They have like the Lon Lon Ranch or whatever. It's like things that, like, if you play the old one afterwards, you'll still go like, oh my god, that's that thing that I saw from XYZ place. Like, they're still kind of to try and knit it all together. Because that was the thing going back to, like, this came out in 2011, and like that was the year that they brought out the Hyrule Historia, which is like their attempt to go like, don't worry guys, everything is connected. This is the lore of like Legend of Zelda, and they did their best, but like there was no real way to like fully explain how there is a cartoon Link next to Twilight Princess's more adult Link or whatever. And then in Breath of the Wild, it all just got shattered anyway, because in Breath of the Wild, there's like islands named after characters. So it's like, oh, is that way further in the future? Why does Link look completely different? One thing we should talk about, though, is in old school Zeldas, in every single Zelda other than Breath of the Wild, you are waiting to access somewhere because you don't have an item. Like you just said, you're sort of like encouraged in Skyward to go back into Skyloft and then like go to some place with like a coiled up vine that now you can hit with a slingshot and create a like a swing rope or whatever. What do you think of that approach to game design? Does that feel more rigid and formulaic? Like, did you, because when it happened in Breath of the Wild, it was like, oh my god, you guys inverted it. You gave us all the abilities in the first 5 minutes, and then it's just on you to figure out how to use them. And I love the Breath of the Wild approach to puzzles, but going the other way around, does it feel retroactively fresh going down the, here's a dungeon puzzle, here's like all these sort of things?
Yeah, you know, like yes and no. Like, I really enjoy both approaches, but, you know, I've always been a sucker for that kind of, you know, Metroidvania-style game design where you have, like, certain areas and you get more abilities, then you go back and you uncover new paths, you do different things. Like, I've been a sucker for that my entire life, so doing it here...
get
like,
on
I
Metroidvania, for the love of God.
What? Metroidvania? That's just...
You
I don't
might
know,
as well
know
call it Arkham
Asylum
style at this stage. pioneering game.
That's my generations, isn't it? That's what we're going to start referring it as.
You know, I love when Shadow Complex pioneered this. Like, it's a great Metroidvania, but it's not the original. What is it?
Metroidvania is a genre to me, not a franchise. Well, two franchises, but I'm afraid...
After you ate a Kit Kat backwards, this is the worst thing you've said.
Like, complete tangent. People who eat Kit Kats, how do you eat them? Do you peel them off, like, one by one and eat them, you know, individual fingers? Or do you just... eat it like a grown-up, take the foil off, and just chomp straight into both of them. Like, that's how you're supposed to scran it.
No, it's not. Age has got nothing to do with it. No one is sitting around of a certain advanced age going like, well, I've hit the age where I eat it the wrong way then. I just eat it downwards. No, you get it in the foil, you run your thumb down it to, like, split down the foil, and then you snap it, and then you eat both halves.
On Twitter, this is just the Kit Kat podcast now, and he asked you about it, because I was thinking about it. You know when you get like a Kit Kat that is four fingers?
Yes.
How do you eat those still individually? Because for me, I split it in half, eat two versions of two. Like,
oh my God.
In full like that. That's how I eat the four, so I eat the two in tubes.
You're taking like the length ways, and then you go downwards. You eat it like down the length, which is, I can't, I mean, if you're starving, I get it. But
that's it. I'm always starving, mate. I'm always hungry. So I want to just slam it in my mouth as quick as possible.
I can't believe you had a four. You're like, it's encouraging you to split them. It's like, here's more splits. And you've gone, I'll split that into two chomps. Why don't you just eat all four of it in one go?
Nah, that's perverted. See, that's the step too far.
That's insane.
That is insane. You just split it into two. Or maybe if you're feeling generous, then you split it into four individual ones. Anyway, what were we talking about?
We were talking about the old cheeky puzzles and old school Zelda approaches to said puzzles.
Yes, I was, you know, talking to you before we started filming, and in the thing I love about this Zelda, and I imagine all the previous Zeldas, is that I'm not a very smart man, Scott Telford. I'm not.
That is an absolute lie, but carry on.
I'm not that smart in real life. I'm very kind of like puzzled by common sense things. But
you're saying this right, but you're about to say that you beat a puzzle that I had to Google, so it's not. It's going to go the other way anyway.
Maybe just one set up for one huge flex and one humble brag. But Skyward Sword and Zelda in general makes me feel like the smartest person in the room when I pull off these answers to these puzzles, because they're all kind of, I like that they're all based around, you know, for the most part, common sense and like experimentation. And it's like things that other games wouldn't allow you to do. If you try it in, well, the few Zeldas that I've played, it always rewards you for doing that. It always rewards you for engaging it in a kind of like, you know, smart and straightforward way for the most part, I would say. Sometimes, like, you know, it's kind of like purposefully straightforward because you're thinking with your gamer brain. You know, so many times you go into a title that is based around puzzles and you've got your gamer brain on. You're not really thinking about how would I act in this world. It's like, what do the developers want me to do? Yeah. Like, what have I learned in previous games that will inform what I'm supposed to do here? But I like how kind of just... not simple Zelda is, but it's just, like I said, straightforward. It's like, okay, we've given you the tools. You know how to do it. Mm-hmm. If you experiment with it, you'll get the end result. And I love that. And I love that it's been rewarding me for that all the way through.
Yeah, yeah. I've always thought of it as like Zelda logic. Like, I just thought, I think the old school ones do it. Like, they're more complex. But I've not got through much of Skyward. I'm only 3 hours in for Skyward Sword. I should have said that at the beginning. But the old school 2D ones, like Link to the Past, like there's a whole... my favorite like dungeon in Zelda history or whatever is this one in Link to the Past, where it's this switch that you can hit on a variety of different floors that inverts different pathways on those different floors. So you're sort of like going to one, level one layer of this whole massive dungeon, flicking this switch, realizing that puts you in a different path when you reemerge on the layer you just came from. And then that lets you hit another switch, which then lets you flick. Like, it's just, it all kind of affects like each other level. And it's just like at one point you end up falling through a hole on the top layer that lets you fall all the way back down to the bottom so you can flick the final switch and invert everything, which lets you get to the end. And it's just this like, it's just this like mind F of a style dungeon puzzle. And I think that stuff is like incredible. But like you said, it's like they do that subtle, like semi-subtle thing of like making you realize that, I just figured that out. Like, I didn't, like, I'm the adventurer, I just figured that out. And I think that's something that they sort of, like, crystallize in Breath of the Wild, because it's like, well, you have all the Sheikah Slate things at the beginning, but it's on you to, like, figure out how to apply them. And then all those little, like, miniature puzzles that we have, there's, like, 100-odd little mini dungeons in Breath of the Wild. So it's like, oh, I'm going to pick up this object and then use it to float over to the edge of the room. And that's how I figured that thing out. And I think that's, like, an evolution of that stuff. But the puzzle that you said, or that I sort of, like, hinted at, is the one, and it's, I guess it's a puzzle spoiler, it's only, like, it's only one puzzle in the game, but is the one with the eye at the very beginning when you're in the Fallen Woods, where you get told from Fee that, like, oh, this eye, this sentry eye, responds to smart objects. And I was like, oh, cool, I'll spin and, like, make it dizzy. So I was, like, spinning on the spot to, like, freak it out. And its eye tries to follow you, and it looks like that's going to happen. So I was spinning for ages. Then Link would get tired, the stamina would run out, he would pant for a while, I would spin some more, and nothing would happen. So I was like, I hate when you go down that wrong route in a puzzle, but I was like, after a while, yeah. I was like, this clearly isn't the right thing to do. And it's very hot in the UK right now. So I just sort of, like, was sat there at 1 a.m. and, like, Ace Ventura in the Rhino, just going, like, I can't do this. So I Googled it. And then the solution was just move the analog stick without targeting to just make it so that, like, you can, like, move the sword around, and that makes it dizzy. But you did figure that out, like, that sort of, like, process of elimination style thing. Whatever mindset it put you in, you managed to get that. And you got the puzzle before that where you shoot the crystal to get in inside the temple as well.
Yes, but the eye thing, you know, I'm not going to pretend like I got it first go. I was stuck in that for a little while.
I was exploring the whole different things. Map trying to find, like, a statue. Because, oh, look where the statue looks. Look where the bird looks northwards or something, it says. And I was like, oh, there must be, like, another statue of a Loftwing that I've missed. So I was way back around the map, searching left, right, and right in front of me. It was right in front of me the whole time.
That crystal one, I just, like, you mentioned it to me this morning. I was like, what puzzle? What crystal puzzle?
That was nothing to me.
Realize, yeah, nothing to me. Another flex. But yeah, like, the eye one, like, I was stuck in it for a while. But then, obviously, you know, like, you, I mean, you were so close there. Like, you were on the right wavelength. I got it through, like, luck eventually when I was kind of, like, you know, I saw it, like, moving around, and I was kind of moving it a little bit faster. And I was like, huh, what if? And then that what if turned out to be the solution. And I love it when the what if becomes exactly what you were supposed to be doing. But yeah, I've been, like, stuck a few times. And I always, like you said, go to Fee, because you can ask them for help, and you can give them they give you a little hint about what you're supposed to do. Sometimes it's more clear than other times, but I like that, you know, even if I'm getting stuck, even if I do need this help, which I absolutely do, it nudges me just enough that I still feel like I'm getting a reward from figuring it out. Like, if it just gives me one bit of information, like in an escape room, I suppose, you know what I mean? Like, you're getting kind of, like, helped along, that you're getting a bit of information to ultimately allow you to solve the puzzle. And even though I've had this helper, even though I've not done it entirely on my own volition, it still feels good, and it still feels rewarding, and it encourages me to experiment. And then if I do, you know, completely run out, then resort to asking for help and hopefully get the solution that way. Though there have been one or two times where I have also had to go to a guide, because I've just been similar to you, sweating my absolute bum off and just being like, I can't do this. I can't literally do this for another 20 minutes.
Literally swimming. That's the thing. I mean, I have, like, I bounce off a lot of puzzles. It depends what the game is. If I know what I'm signing up for, and obviously in Zelda's case, it is puzzles, but it's like something like The Witness. If I'm going into The Witness, then I'm signing up for some cerebral, intense thing that I'm going to have to put up with a lot of figuring this stuff out. And that's fine. And Zelda is obviously, like, a puzzle-based adventure game. So there's, like, I knew that was coming. But at the same time, like, you know, it's been a long time since I played a more traditional Zelda. I mean, like, Link Between Worlds was 2013. I don't think I've been back to one since. I guess I replayed a bit of Ocarina, but whatever. Like, it's been a while since I've had to go back to that and engage that part of your brain. And at the same time, it's so easy now, because, like, the solution is just a few, like, you know, mobile phone taps away to be like, get me out of this purgatory that lets me continue with the game. And because of where I am at the beginning of the story, I just want to, like, I want to get into the main dungeon puzzle, because that thing with the sentry and the crystal outside is just like, you're not even in the main dungeon yet. So I'm like, I want, like, the meat of it. I think it was just a combination of just, like, the way that, like, the temperature is right now in the UK, plus the reality of it being, like, 1 a.m. And I was just kind of like, oh, let me get through this thing. But I'm curious what the rest of the dungeon puzzles and stuff feel like.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And we should talk about Link. What do you think of Link's design? And because obviously they upended it so much in Breath of the Wild, gave him the blue tunic, kind of changed the look of him. What do you think of the... Because when I got the green tunic again with the underarm, he's got like chainmail and then the green tunic on top. And I was like, this is the most badass look he's ever had, which I remember thinking that back in the day, but it was always tied to this like, you know, negatively received game. So I never got too into it. But right. I love green tunic Link. I always hate when I have to switch it for the blue or the red one across like a given story. But yeah, what do you think of like Link's general, I guess everything to do with Link?
Big fan of the green tunic in general. I think Link in this game looks a bit creepy. He scares me a little bit. Every time we get a close-up.
I think Zelda looks really creepy.
They all kind of freak me out, but Link especially, man. Like, I think it's something about like his little hood. His hood's got like, he looks, you remember Noddy?
Do you remember Noddy?
Yeah, he reminds me of, like, the villains from Noddy or, like, the Green Goblin. And it's not, like, the worst thing in the world. It's quite fun in a way, quite charming in a way. But for the first 5 hours or so, I had to kind of wrestle with myself because I was thinking, who is this man and why do I not trust him? Why do I not trust him to do the right thing?
Noddy is, I've never really thought about that, but Noddy is maybe the most aesthetically adjacent comparison you could make to like Skyward Sword, if not like most of Zelda. Yeah, and I used to think Noddy was terrifying when I was a kid. So like, it's not like, it was just like this. So, I mean, clowns, whoever planted the seed that clowns are charming was clearly a psychopath in the first place, noshing the Kit Kats in the wrong direction, left, right, and center. But I mean, for me, like I said, the green tunic looks awesome. I love the Under Armour style thing. And I love the stuff with, we should transition it to combat as well, because obviously this game has a massively unique combat model that they didn't stick with going forward. It was kind of just made for the motion controls, which you can do in this. But I like the whole thing of, you know, you hold a sword up, you can imbue it with like the Skyward energy or whatever, and then you get to do like a beam shot, which you can do in Breath of the Wild too. But that whole approach to combat being motion controls or like specific directional swipes, which they've redesigned a lot of the enemies so that they have like gaps in them, or like you can tell it when you go up against those plant monsters that like they want you to hit them with like a vertical slice or a horizontal slice, or you're fighting one of the regular like moblins and they hold their weapon in a certain direction so you can block in a certain direction or attack in a certain direction. How have you found all the combat stuff? I know that you're playing with motion controls, so we can talk about that too, but what's your general thoughts on the combat?
Yeah, I think it's satisfying to me. I think there's enough challenge there. I really like the boss fights, the way that they make you use, obviously, the directional inputs of the swings alongside the abilities and alongside the new items that you've got. I think the boss fights are an absolute highlight for me, but just generally combat feels good. I like doing the fatal blow when you knock someone on the back and you just jump up and you just come down, stab them in the heart.
I miss them in games in general, to be honest. Where did finishing moves go? Like, I mean, I've been going back through Judgment and you can do a lovely little, like, I'm gonna smash this lad through a window, or like, you know, break his back over a pole or something for the big finish. Where did they've just gone?
That can be our podcast next week, just where did finishing moves go, where did the fatal blows go,
literally, where did they go?
I am using motion controls, which might be, you know, just playing this game entirely wrong perhaps to a lot
not
of people,
in Nintendo's eyes, that's what they want you to do.
That's what I mean. You know, I originally started with handheld, which automatically switches it to the controller, you know, the controller based controls. That doesn't make any sense, but you know what I mean? Not motion control.
But you start using the right analog stick to do swipes. That's instead it. Of moving the old arm. But yeah.
That's it, yes. But when I docked it, went on the big telly, and that's when it just automatically went to motion controls. And I was like, oh yeah, I forgot these were even in the game. This is how little I kind of like know about this game's reputation. So I just stuck with them. And now that's my preferred way to play it, because I think, you know, it is finicky a little bit and you have to do a lot of recalibrating, especially in flight. I think flight is kind of not very great with the motion controls, but moment-to-moment combat, exploring, I think it just adds an extra dimension. And I've always been a sucker for motion controls anyway. This is going to maybe break your mind, Scott Telford, and I can't even look at you while I say it. For the first time, I played Resident Evil 4 was on the Wii with the motion controls. Like, that was my first experience.
I did know this about you. It's all right. Yes. I've already thrown up over this before. It can't get to me again. I don't mind motion control aiming. Like, I'd never got on board with the absolute lunatics that said that Splatoon 2 was better with motion control aiming. Maybe it is, but I couldn't get there. But the aiming in Skyward Sword, I still use the motion aiming for the slingshot and for like looking around and stuff, using the dousing thing to see where you need to go next. Like, I don't mind motion aiming. It is quite accurate. And I like the idea of it, like, especially in this case. I still remember when Shigeru Miyamoto showed off when he was on stage. Have you seen that legendarily, like, the E3 fail where he tries to show off?
Oh.
Oh my god,
that
was the E3 that largely buried this game in the first place, was Miyamoto coming out. And it's a great entrance. He comes out with the sword and the shield, and he's like, hey, the next Zelda, oh my god, and everyone's freaking out. And then he does a gameplay demo, and the motion controls do not work at all in a live stage environment for a good half hour. It's very brutal. But that thing went down in history. But I like the idea of it, like the whole, you know, left hand is the shield. As you raise it, he literally raises the shield in real time, and you can move the blade around and all that kind of thing. And I love the idea of that. It's just that, I don't know, most of the time with motion controls, I've never had a one-to-one 100% successful experience. There's always been something that's gone wrong, even in PSVR. Or other VR stuff, like if I need to like lean down or I need to try and react in like a bit faster, it doesn't keep up. Something floats away from where it's supposed to be. Something just doesn't track. And I just end up going like, well, that wouldn't happen if I was on buttons or on a controller. So I just end up going back to it. And I love the idea of it in concept. And I think like Skyward Sword makes like some of the most sense for a game like that, because you are this really like archetypal warrior with a shield and a sword. It's easy to map those things. But yeah, for me, that didn't really work. But you found like massive success with that stuff.
Totally. Like, it's really strange because I've actually had more missed swipes when I was using the analog stick than I have with the actual motion controls. I've found like combat, especially, to be, you know, ridiculously reliable. Maybe it's because you only have a select amount of, you know, directions that you can go in. You don't have like total freeform control over like the sword or anything, you know.
Because in my head, I was like,
left, right.
I was like, it's going to completely mess up whether I want to do a vertical slice or a diagonal slice. I just didn't trust it to get that right. But if it is, then that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, I've had no problems. I think the only problems that I've encountered is when it comes to whether I'm controlling some of the flying items or whether I'm actually in flight myself, then it can be a bit finicky. Then you're having to always recalibrate. Then I'm kind of like a bit annoyed, a little bit frustrated. But for the most part, like I like them anyway, but I do think it adds like an extra element of tactility and an extra dimension to the world. You know, if I'm rolling bombs like bowling balls and I hit someone with it, like that feels good. And it doesn't feel like it takes, you know, a ridiculous amount of positioning or skill to pull off. It feels more intuitive than I expected it to. I expected not to use the motion controls at all, honest. And now I find myself, you know, turning them on if they ever automatically turned off. Of course, if I'm playing handheld, though, I'm not gonna do that. I'm not gonna put myself through it if it's handheld. But
No. I'm gonna be sitting with it with a tablet in front of you, like that sort of old Switch advert of the guy on the plane with his little tablet on the fold down seat. Because are you doing like motion controls, like sat down with the motion controls? Are you standing up full? Because I would want to do like full on. Let me stand up. Let me pretend I'm Blink. I mean, it's named after me anyway. So like, I'm gonna be standing up there with the sword and shield. Or have you found like a happy medium?
No, just sat down. You know, I feel like sat down does it quite well. I don't feel like I need to stand up. Like, even the shield, I just have to, like, flick my wrist forward and I can knock back, you know, lightning or whatever's getting attacked at me. I've been sat down. I've been quite comfy. I've been playing it for, like, 5 hours at a time. sometimes my eyes hurt, but apart from that, it's been a good experience.
It's a lovely time. Yeah. I did want to throw in, because you mentioned the flight stuff, and that was another sort of like major mechanic that we haven't really touched on too much, but that whole idea of you can just sort of like hit down on the D-pad when you dive off the Skyloft place, or anywhere when you're in the Flying Islands, and then they had this whole like flight mechanic to get you from A to B, which felt like, I know you've not played Wind Waker, but that was the one that was like all set on the sea. It was like clusters of islands all across this massive ocean, and you had to like sail using this dragon boat left to different places. And that for me, like that sort of scattered approach, like to a Zelda, ultimately did put me off the original Wind Waker, because it is this like, it's just such a massive fetch quest towards the end. They trim it down in the HD version, which I'm still crossing fingers is going to come out later this year, because it's still Zelda's 35th anniversary. Like, what are we doing? Like, what are you doing, Nintendo? Like with the OLED Switch and just ignoring Zelda, or like, oh, here's Skyward Sword, I guess. Like, where's Wind Waker HD? But that whole idea of taking Wind Waker's sort of ethos approach to level design environments, and then going like, what if that was in the sky, and then giving you the bird to fly around on, the loft wing. I like the idea of like you raise up, and then if you dive, you can get more speed as you come out of it. It's kind of like Arkham City style, but I still think Arkham City did it better. I feel like the gliding has more power in like Batman. I feel like I can't think of that many gliding mechanics in games that have pulled it off very well. But what's your thoughts on that idea being that that's the way that you get around the majority of places in Skyloft?
I dig it. And, you know, like I said, maybe this is also a benefit from not knowing anything else. But for me, having that kind of like, you know, connected hub world that kind of like shoots off into these, you know, beams of light that let you go down to the surface, let you go down to explore these other worlds. Like, for me, that's, I thought that was a really neat way to connect everything and, you know, make it make sense that you're constantly going backwards and forwards from the sky to the surface. And I just couldn't stop thinking that if I had this when I was a kid, if I just wasn't so, well, first of all, if I could afford any kind of Nintendo system, but also if I wasn't so, you know, weirdly against Nintendo and Mario and Zelda like I was, you know.
Oh, I wouldn't have that rebellious phase where it's like, oh, Mario's for kids. I mean, give me Sonic. Like, yeah, I'm totally.
Yeah. For me, I was even more obnoxious, Scott. I was like, I don't want Mario, I don't want Zelda. Give me Solid Snake, give me Call of Duty, give me all that stuff. Yeah, like I was just thinking, like, this is such a cool way, such a creative way to connect everything. And while the flying itself isn't the most fun thing to do, and it is a little bit slow, I like that you have these other islands kind of like dotted around in the sky, and the fact that everything kind of like is connected, and you're uncovering places by shooting light into them, and then you're literally diving from the sky it like down into them. I just thought that was quite cool, and doesn't really, I don't know, I prefer that rather than segmented levels, even though the levels obviously are still segmented in a way.
Yeah, it's a bit Mario Galaxy style of just sort of like, oh, that's like we can actually do more like biome variation because we can split all this stuff apart. It's interesting as well because obviously Breath of the Wild 2 is going back to that. It's going back to the idea of like, oh, now the kingdom is in the sky again. Which like lore wise, I never knew the explanation from Skyward that it was just to get away from this ancient evil that like dwells on the surface. So just lift the kingdom into the sky. It's just fine. Just sort of Comstock it, and we're all just fine up there. But I like that it's sort of it's a nice like thematic bridge, I guess. And like some of the first time you dive off the loft wing and just fall through the clouds, like the camera goes behind you and it is still in game, and I was like, oh, this is like a little taste of what it's going to be like in Breath of the Wild too, because they've had that screenshot out of Link like free falling through the clouds, and I was like, oh, I'm like looking forward to this stuff. So I like that they've like, I guess, picked Skyward Sword like to be the one that they bring back out. It's obviously 10 years since it came out and stuff, but it kind of works as like a bridge to like Breath of the Wild 2 anyway. Do you have any other final thoughts or other sort of general thoughts you've got on Skyward Sword, because you're, like I said, you're way further than me in it, and I know obviously you're going to finish it and stuff, but what's your, like, I guess, general mentality thoughts on where you're at right now?
Yeah, I mean, I was loving it for like the first 10 to 12 hours or so. And then I must admit, I hit a little bit of a lull when, you know, I kind of did the big kind of like three biomes, and then you're forced to kind of like go back to them and look for three other things like around there, you know, using your powers to explore new areas. And there was a little bit of stop and start in the pacing there that I didn't love, but I'm over that hump now, and I'm into like the end late game dungeons. And those are really good. Those are really creative. You know, I did one last night that took my breath away a little bit, but I just kind of, I guess as an ending thing, I kind of want to explore a little bit very quickly about what you said there about like this kind of like being a bridge to Breath of the Wild. Because when this was announced, when the remaster was announced, and Nintendo were very much kind of like, you know, relying on the fact that, you know, people who like Breath of the Wild might like this. They were drawing comparisons with them. They were like, look, if you enjoyed what you picked up in 2017, you're going to enjoy this one because it shares a lot of elements. And while I think that's a little bit egregious in some ways.
I agree with that, to be honest. But yeah.
I know. I don't know if I fully agree. I can see the connection. in places. I can see where if you enjoyed certain things in Breath of the Wild that I did, you can come here and kind of like not see where those systems started, but see how they were evolved, see how the world was evolved, see how the gameplay was evolved. Because in a lot of ways, I do think the approach to some of the puzzles, to the world, to what you can do, very much leads into Breath of the Wild. Just that, you know, the control you have over the character is more limited. Like you don't have the same free form agency over obviously where you can climb, where you can jump even, you know, all that stuff. It comes into Breath of the Wild. But the other stuff, I do appreciate the connective tissue that is there. I don't think it's the exact kind of spiritual successor that Nintendo were billing it as, but it is interesting that Breath of the Wild was like my first big Zelda. And going into this one, it does feel like a natural segue. It doesn't feel anywhere near as jarring as I was expecting from people who have told me like, oh, Breath of the Wild's so different from the traditional Zeldas. Because looking at these two, at least, like obviously I can see where they are markedly different, but I can also see where they're very, very similar, you know?
Yeah, yeah. They still share, like, I mean, it's still Zelda. It's still, I mean, the audio footprint of a Zelda is still quite identifiable. Like I love the music in Skyward Sword. Like even this, that stupid bullies, like the bully theme that comes in when that guy's like bullying you at the beginning, he's got this like slow trumpet waddle. It's just so great. But yeah, I think that the actual like DNA of the series like comes through. I don't know if I would side with those people that like, yeah, do, because people who don't like Breath of the Wild really don't like Breath of the Wild because it is so different to the old school stuff. And I was like so ready to break free of that stuff because it's all, if you go back and play Ocarina of Time, it's not that much different from Skyward Sword. Like they're not, like the series has traveled a lot, but like the actual call out, I'm going to lock on, I'm going to rotate around this guy, backward jump, forward jump. Like obviously they added the combat model in Skyward, but the majority of 3D Zeldas play the same. And it was like, I was waiting for, and the structure of them is the same. Like here's the safe area at the very beginning, and you know, you protect these people and get these items and then go to these dungeons and this stuff will open up. And it's, they did that for like, you know, 20 odd years. And I was just like, okay, I guess 15 years. And I was like, I'm ready for something else. So I was someone who was like loving Breath of the Wild because it felt like a breath of fresh air to that franchise. But I get why people were so like, they just want more of that like traditional style stuff. One of the things I was going to ask you though is, because we like are in the year, the 35th anniversary year of Zelda, do you think if they then said, because you're like new to the old school stuff, if they made more re-releases like for more people like you, were you up for like, okay, right, let's do like 2, 3, 4 more 3D Zeldas? Or do you think like they should actually scatter them out like they've done with this and tie them into like 10th, 20th year anniversaries going forward?
Oh, dude, like being incredibly selfish, perhaps, I want them all right now. If they were all available right now, not even like full-on remasters, if I could just play the old ones on the Switch, like, you know, like ports of them, I would play them all back-to-back. Like, you know, I enjoy going through franchises anyway, and I've wanted to do Zelda for the longest time. I was disappointed that, you know, Ocarina of Time, Wind Waker, etc., weren't available on the Switch like I thought they were going to be when I bought the Switch. They were
still
just,
can't,
you know,
believe that, yeah.
On the Wii U instead, and on the Wii and stuff. So I've been waiting for these games to be able to play them in a cheaper, more accessible way for like the longest time. So yeah, for me, if they were to release more by the end of this year, I'd play them immediately. I'd play them back to back. I'd live on Zelda. I'd watch the old animated series or whatever it was, the Sega CD thing. And I'd just live in that world for a bit because I want
The old Philips CDI, so you could see that the worst animation in human history.
That's it, yeah.
It'd be a hell of, I think Twilight Princess's intro would make you run for the hills because it's the stuff from the beginning of this, but without the lore payoff, it's just sort of like, it takes forever to get going. But yeah, not to worry. Anyway, we might check back in on Skyward Sword depending on there's nothing else to play, so we'll just see what happens and how we feel this time next week. But for now, this has been whatever this has been. I've been Scott Telford, joined by Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott. Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. We'll catch you all next week. Bye bye.
Bye bye. Make sure you eat your Kit Kats properly. That's the last thing I have.
And by
to
that
say.
I mean split them for the love of God.
No.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts?
Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.